spinoff. Is there any word more thrilling to the human soul? Hi, I'm Troy McClure. You may remember me from such TV spinoffs as Son of Sanford and Son and After Mannix.
This is the Extra, Extra Hot Grape Podcast, Episode 4, That's Just Wrong. I am his own grandfather, David T. Cole, and I'm here with Circus Peanut Sarah D. Bunting.
The pride, the love.
And Platypus Tara Ariana.
Quack meow. Welcome to Extra Extra Hot Great. Today we are discussing a topic that was suggested by one of your fellow Patreon patrons listeners. This comes from Eric Akawi or Akawi. Apologies for mispronouncing that, as I'm sure I did one of those or both. Eric wants to know, what are some shows that got the wrong spinoff and what spinoffs should they have had? We have a bunch. I will start us off. The parent show is Friends. The spinoff is Joey. Now, look, I love Joey as much as the next guy would, or probably more, to be honest. But the problem with Joey was that it was too many changes. It excised too many of the other friends. It moved the show to a new location. It added characters we had never known before, even though, you know, his sister in the show is played by Drea Di Matteo. Great actor. No one's mad about her getting work. The problem is we've already seen all of his other sisters on Friends, and she was never one of them. So, like, they had an opportunity to build on, you know, the little they had already established for his character. Not that his sisters ever had a ton to do, but, like, there were famous ones that we'd seen before. Like, Marla Sokoloff was supposed to be his youngest sister, who got pregnant unexpectedly. They could have built on that. None of that happened. Joey, misbegotten mess. I think we can all agree. Yes?
Sure. I remember nothing about it. So there you go.
Yeah, I always thought that might have been one of those, I think your analysis is correct, but I thought it might have been one of those, like, a little of him goes far enough things.
For sure. Yes. And I think that's probably true of if they had tried to build the show around a spinoff around any of the friends.
Like, yeah. No,
there's
no,
a reason
I think
there's
true.
Six of them, you know, so that we only get a little bit of any one of them ever, you know, like in any episode, there's not a ton. And to build a whole show around like a character whose main note was like, he's dumb is not. It's not a great idea. It's like a reverse Frasier was what they had done. So instead of Joey, you know, in terms of what the right spinoff would have been, there was a time when I would say Chandler and Monica. And I remember like way before Chandler and Monica got together as a couple on the show, someone, and I wish I could find it, but of course their archives were just called Chandler and Monica scripts or something. Someone was writing fanfic, like full episode length scripts in which Chandler and Monica had gotten together before the show did it. And they were pretty good. Like I read them all. It's possible they got scrubbed from the internet or someone was embarrassed or tried to actually start a real career. Cause I apologize if someone remembers this other than me, let me know who this was. But anyway, by the end of the show, the two of them were very cloying and, you know, no one would have wanted to watch a whole show about them. Arguably no one would want to watch my right spinoff either, but here's my pitch, Ross and Rachel in Paris. That was what is happening at the end of the series. Ross and Rachel get together. It's possible that you could have built a solo show around Rachel, except that if Ross and Rachel hadn't gotten together at the end of Friends, there would have been literal like hockey riots in the streets. Like people would have been so mad. And I know there's a great contingent of people who never wanted Ross and Rachel to get together. And I understand that, too. But I think there is a way that you could have transplanted these two characters to a new city and like made it kind of interesting. And I always liked I had a soft spot for Rachel the whole way through. So I would have liked to have seen more of her. And arguably, Jennifer Aniston maybe should have never left TV. That's a discussion for another day. Sarah, what is your first wrong spinoff?
First of all, I'd like to say that my chosen friend spinoff would have been Elliot Gould and Tom Selleck's characters solving crimes.
Yeah.
Because that's what they should do.
Yep, I would watch that.
My first selection is 21 Jump Street's notorious spinoff, Booker.
Oh, Booker.
Oh, Dennis Booker. look, at the time, it made perfect sense. The show was very popular, but Johnny Depp was like just being a bitch about it. He actually was being a bitch about it from Jump Street, as it were, like wouldn't sign to do the show until they got Frederick Forrest, and then Frederick Forrest. Yeah. And then they killed that character off, and Captain Fuller came in and was not having any of Hansen's shit. When I used to do the recaps, I would do a count of, I started off being like, shut up, Penhall, because Penhall always got like the stuff. But then Hansen actually is like a huge dick. So I changed it to shut up, Hansen. So I think they really brought in Booker so that they could, you know, have a guy who was like never going to cut his hair and understood that his job was to like have a ton of gel and wear a leather jacket and, you know, be teen girl nip. And wasn't going to have a problem with it. And then I don't know exactly what happened, but they spun him off. It was bad. Everything that has happened to Richard Grieco has been pretty bad, including like whatever is happening to his face. Like he and Vincent Young seem to have these like very similar career and face and weirdness trajectories that are kind of Mickey Rourkean. But yeah, like 21 Jump Street was not great, but at least it tried to still sort of be a procedural and like take the concerns of kids seriously. But Booker did not do that. It was just this like cynical piece of piffle featuring a guy who couldn't really act. And it tried to be funny and was not. I feel that the correct spinoff would have been a prequel featuring Captain Fuller, who, why can't I remember this actor's name? I'm going to quickly look it up. Stephen Williams, who is like a legit certified 100% badass in speaking voice and line delivery. And it would have just been like a fun flashback to like when he was first coming up on the force or like something from the late 70s, early 80s. Where they could still use the same actor, but then have some cool period clothes. That character was almost never annoying, unlike Booker and Penthall. like almost any other spinoff would have worked better. I would have watched an Aoki spinoff also.
Dave.
My first one, the parent show is Walking Dead. The spinoff that wasn't so great is the only one we have to date, that's Fear the Walking Dead, although apparently they just put another one in the pipeline. My problem with Fear the Walking Dead was that for me, the best spinoff is going to be one that deals with Ground Zero and Day Zero in a meaningful way.
Yeah.
And Fear the Walking Dead sort of rushed right past that into a place where Fear the Walking Dead was sort of inhabiting the same type of storylines and the same type of situation as the mothership was, a small group of survivors outside the city, trying to make ends meet and try not to get bit. To me, I wanted to start 24 hours before Zombie Day, and I want it to be near Ground Zero. So it's like we're at the epicenter of it all. And the epicenter needs to be an urban setting, not like somewhere in the sticks or even in the suburbs. I want it like in a city, and it doesn't need to be LA or New York. It could be just, you know, whatever. It could be Columbus. I don't care, but something like that. And the characters that we follow are a group of local government workers dealing with the outbreak as it happens and as they figure out what's going on in like a local municipal war room setting.
Mm-hmm. I would watch that. Manage the Walking Dead. I would watch the shit out of that.
Totally.
Yeah. So the series is like, it's very limited. I would say the series ends 2 weeks after, like 2 weeks in universe over like eight episodes or something like that. And like we deal with a total party kill. Like everybody dies. And It's just that nobody can really deal with this in a meaningful way because, one, we're not that organized. Two, we certainly didn't see that zombies would be coming to get us bit. So, like, really the gist of the show, episode to episode, is about the crumbling of those institutions, how things fall away as people fall away and as they become more selfish in their actions, you know, when they see everybody else getting bit. So local government, first responders, healthcare, like even stuff that like food logistics, how that breaks down, and like garbage collection, like that just make everything exponentially worse every day. It would be grim, but it's a grim show. And I think that's like a part of it we haven't seen that would be interesting. They couldn't sustain a series on it, but I think it has value. Manage the Walking Dead. Thank you, Sarah.
Yes, love it. Agree.
All right, back to me. I'm going to talk about a spinoff that didn't actually go, but it got to the level of being announced. The Office was at one time going to have a spinoff show called The Farm. This was going to take place at Dwight's family beet farm. So giving a bigger role to, I guess, his brother Moe's, who's played by the writer Ken Schur. As I recall, Thomas Middleditch was cast on this. This was like years before Silicon Valley.
Oh my God, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And the problem with this one, similar to the Joey problem, not that Dwight is a dumb character, but he's very one note. And, you know, we've already talked on this podcast before about how Dwight ended up becoming like a bucket character for The Office, where it's like anything weird, just have Dwight do it. It doesn't matter. He can be the weirdest character ever. And having him, even if he was a supporting character in this show, like if Moe's is the only other touchstone we have, like what we've seen of Moe's is that he's barely verbal. Like it would have been an extremely weird show to watch. So instead, what I want to talk about as a possible right spinoff is something that they actually tried to do on a web series scale, which is Kelly Kapoor. The Kelly Kapoor Adventures. Mm-hmm. They had Kelly star in several web episodes or webisodes. I don't know why I split it up. Including the most famous one was her with Ellie Kemper as Erin, being like a pop group called Subtle Sexuality. They like took it super seriously, or Subtle Sexuality was the song. I think. And they were actually really funny. And both of those characters are like kook balls, but I think it actually would have worked. They had a very, bully acolyte relationship on the show, with Kelly being very dominant. And I think there's ways you could have explored that. But then again, you could also argue we kind of did get the Kelly Kapoor show in the form of The Mindy Project. So I can't really be that critical of it because I liked some of the Mindy Project. It had good moments. So yeah, that's my alt.
Just to throw it in there, something they can never actually make. But you remember how like Baywatch Nights went from a PI show to like Buffy Light?
Yes.
Do that with Creed.
I can see that.
Start off like being a PI in Scranton, and then like slowly introduce supernatural elements into it.
Sure. Yeah, and we find out he's actually undead, and no one is surprised.
Yes, and then he's managing The Walking Dead. I'm into it.
Sarah.
My next one is the Chicago Fire Med PD Justice Parking Complex. These are all spinoffs, basically, of each other, and Chicago Fire started it, and then it was PD, and then it was Med, and then Justice, and I think the first three are still extant. Justice was killed, and then Lil Stone was transferred over to Law & Order SVU.
Right.
And has been, he will be escorted off the premises. They can't seem to keep people in that ADA slot. I wish Raul Esparza had stayed. He was the best one yet, but he didn't. I do think that the better choice for a crossover, like all of those shows are like fine, I guess. Like Chicago PD in particular is like perfectly adequate hotel TV with attractive people running around scream whispering, and occasionally a bomb goes off. Like it's, you know, it's Dick Wolf product. It's fine. You know what it is. It's fine.
Yep.
Chicago Fire ditto, but with more fires. But I think that instead of doing Chicago Justice, when they did a series of crossovers, there was like a threes over with SVU a couple of years ago. And the SVU team had to go to Chicago and work with the Chicago PD team to track down the serial killer who escaped from not Dannemora. And it was actually really good. Like, it gave SVU a shot of life, and it took the self-important cry voicey like piss out of some of the characters, which needed to happen. And not least, Olivia Benson had pretty great chemistry with I forget the character's last name, Hank, the yelly Scientologist, Jason Bay. Beg?
Oh, yeah, you know, not a Scientologist anymore, but yes.
No, he definitely is not.
Beggy?
Beignet? Yes. they had great chemistry. She ended up getting together with Tucker, and then the show broke them up, which I'm still fucking pissed about. So I really feel that the spinoff should have been Chicago SVU transfer more characters like back and forth at will.
Yeah.
And just have it be kind of like a Homicide, Life on the Street, Law and Order verse type of situation. Mm-hmm. And then you can pull some characters from Homicide, because, you know, there are a couple of shows that Munch still has not been on, and that's a problem. So that's what I do. I would do less spinoff and more like, I don't know, crossover or
franchise building.
Yes, franchise building.
The Marvel universe as Chicago crime. Yeah.
Well, and put them on it too. Fuck it. I don't care.
Ant-Man.
All right. My second choice is the Yogi Bear show. And it caught my eye because, like, everybody remembers, like, Laugh Olympics as being a spinoff of the Yogi Bear show. But it turns out there's, like, a billion shows that are actually spinoffs from the original, and some are, like, second-generation spinoffs. Here's a few. Yogi's Gang, of course, Laugh Olympics. Yogi's Space Race. Galaxy Goof-Ups. The Buford Files. The Galloping Ghost. Yogi's Treasure Hunt. The new Yogi Bear show. Fender Bender 500. And Yo Yogi. And I believe there's still more. My idea is this. Let's get rid of all of those. Let's like just flash forward in the future. And my premise is that Jellystone Park's Ranger Smith, he's the park ranger in the original series, he looks back on his life. He considers it a life of failure. Not only failure to keep a bear from stealing food in a national park, but keep in mind what all the animals are doing. It's a failure to keep animals in check. And this leads to this sort of Planet of the Apes-esque world that we live in with Yogi Bear, where animals challenge humans for dominance in like many, many avenues of life, including sport, the space race, mineral resources, and just general economic well-being. We now have competitors from the animal world. So Ranger Smith, I'm going to say he's 67. He's riddled with cancer. And as he is dying, he vows to end what he couldn't stop decades ago in a spinoff simply called Ranger Smith. Ranger Smith, the show, is basically My Name is Earl, but instead of righting past wrongs with good deeds, Smith is correcting history and his previous failures one cartoon assassination per episode. So he goes through the whole Hanna-Barbera Yogi universe, working his way up to Yogi in sort of a, you know, raising the stakes, Breaking Bad season after season way. And there's lots of people to choose from. And, you know, some of the assassinations come with very particular sort of missions and takes on things, much in the same way My Name is Earl, you know, whatever he had to do to people that he wronged in the past, you know, set the tone for that episode, whether it was sweet or bittersweet or funny or sad. That is Ranger Smith, my spinoff idea for the Yogi Bear show.
If I may, this sounds like a job for the comic book writer who's reimagined Snagglepuss and the Flintstones, as we heard in our most recent game.
Oh my God.
Ranger Smith has to be someone like Robert Forster, like kind of that level of old gruff looking guy who both at home in a seedy bar in the old West, you know, he has that kind of look to him. He has to be like lived in.
Wow. I love it. Okay, back to me. My parent show is Ally McBeal, and the spinoff is Ally. And I know it sounds like I just said the same thing twice, and in a sense, I did. The children will not remember. When Ally McBeal premiered in, I want to say, 1997. This was still at a time when a network show could be a gigantic phenomenon. Like, This Is Us wishes it had the ratings Ally McBeal did. It was such a huge show, especially if you ever, if you watch it now, like, you would never believe that anyone liked it. It's so stupid. But, 2 years into its run, it was still so popular that Fox went and made a spinoff that was like, I'll just read what Wikipedia has. A half-hour version entitled Ally began airing in parallel with the main program. So in parallel, these shows were both on the air at the same time. This version, designed in a sitcom format, used re-edited scenes from the main program along with previously unseen footage. The intention was to further develop the plots in the comedy drama in a sitcom style. It also focused only on Ally's personal life, cutting all the courtroom plots. Even this could not work. They made 13 of them. Only 10 aired. The weirdest idea I've ever heard. It was such a big swing for the fences of, like, how can we monetize this further? Because, you know, just getting David E. Kelly to make another show was apparently not an option. Like, he's a hit maker. Just have him poop out another lawyer idea. It's shocking to me that this worked. But anyway,
he did have a string of bombs after that, though, like around the turn of the millennium.
Right.
It was just like every year another David E. Kelly show that was canceled after four episodes.
Right. There was some of them lasted a while. Like Boston Public hung on for a while. The Practice started the same year as Ally McBeal, and it was on forever.
I think it still is on.
Yeah.
It's like the jag of William Shatner's career.
Right. But just the hubris of Fox thinking, like, we can actually just scoop up footage that was not good enough for the real show and fashion it into this terrible golem of a sitcom. Like, why? Anyway, instead of doing this, I mean, Ally McBeal, should it have any spinoffs? No. But if they had to do it, I would propose they do Ally McBog, cutting together only scenes that take place in the unisex bathroom. Sarah.
Excellent.
Thank you.
I was afraid to take this one from Dave, but I'm going to talk about X-Files and Lone Gunman with Dave. Dave, did you watch Lone Gunman?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Did you enjoy Lone Gunman?
Yeah, I thought it was quirky. I mean, I think if they made that show today, it would be like a magnitude better, just because I feel like nerd culture has both evolved and is way more accepted. So I think that type of show would be both better and more and better received today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is going to be my comment. I watched the whole thing and I liked it fine. And I was doing a little research before we recorded, and Vince Gilligan, co-creator of it, was like, you know, I feel like if it had come out earlier or later, it would have worked. And he said, you know, you learn a lot from failures, and that was one technically, but I've always been proud of that show. I've never been embarrassed of it. To this day, I don't quite understand why people didn't respond to it. And I think, Dave, you're right on. So basically, my spinoff idea is The Lone Gunman again, just now.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like it.
That would totally
work.
Because
I think people weren't ready. And I think also, this isn't from anything that Gilligan said. It's just my sense of, like, I've been spending a little bit of time with The X-Files and also Kolchak, the Night Stalker, lately, don't ask. But my sense is that this, like, The Lone Gunman took this lighter-hearted, sort of like nerd positive aspect of The X-Files and, like, siloed it into its own thing. And it's not like that couldn't have stayed in The X-Files, but there was a certain point in the parent show where the, like, unrelenting paranoia and, like, nihilistic view of the government was never leavened by anything. And, like, even Scully stopped bothering rolling her eyes. And I think The Lone Gunman, like, it's like they just subtracted that whole, like, occasional, you know, really, like, we're the X-Files and we live in the basement and this is ridiculous. Like, that attitude was put into The Lone Gunman and then never sort of returned to the parent show.
Yeah.
So I think both shows would be different if they were made today, but you know, you could argue that a lot of shows are just trying to remake both of those shows today. But yeah, they should take another run at it. I'd watch it.
Mm-hmm.
Except they're dead, but yeah. In the universe, they died in the X-Files. Right.
Well, it could be a prequel.
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, they threw out the baby with the bathwater in the reboot. So why not just say, oh, no, we found them. And they were under this pile of wood. All right. My next one is very short. We were talking about the MASH spinoff After MASH in Game Time. I don't know why After MASH, like, it wasn't a good show, obviously. It got canceled. Like, it's always, like, up at the top of failed spinoff list, yeah. Just because I suppose MASH ran so long and After MASH was canceled in a heartbeat. I guess the disparity makes it seem way worse than it probably was.
Well, and the relationship between the show titles, too, it's like it kind of lends itself to that because people immediately know what you're talking about.
I was just researching After MASH to kind of remember what the hell went on there. And I discovered, I did not know this, this was new information to me, there was another spinoff that they made from MASH, never aired, only went to pilot. It was called Walter, and actually it was called W asterisk A asterisk L asterisk T asterisk E asterisk R. And it was all about Radar when he goes back to St. Louis after the war, and he's a rookie cop. I don't care about the show. Really, what I want to talk about is why was this show, why was it not just Walter? Why did it have to be with all the asterisks? Yes, obviously marketing. But the thing with MASH is it stands for something, right? It's like Mobile Army Surgical Hospital, I think, or something like
that. I think that's right.
And yeah. So Walter, therefore, needs to stand for something. Obviously, it doesn't stand for something. But I spent a good 30 minutes trying to figure out a way to make Walter stand for something that makes sense to the show. So here you go. White Altruistic Law Tenant Enforcement Radar. That's what the spinoff Walter stands for.
That is much more thought than they gave to it.
All right. Well, I'm going to go to ground that I know very, very well. The parent show is Beverly Hills 90210. And as listeners to our sister podcast, again, with this, are well aware, we have started covering its spinoff, Melrose Place. And Melrose Place, it's not that it's the wrong spinoff. It's fine. It definitely, after the first few episodes, really diverged from Beverly Hills 90210. It was a back. It was, although they are related, it was definitely a backdoor pilot situation.
It's like when instead of giving a new Oreo flavor, you get like a new Oreo form factor, which isn't really an Oreo. Like
right.
The spinoff from Oreo was the Oreo milky chocolate bar. It's not an Oreo, but it's still got right. Oreo on the name. Yeah.
Yes. So this is not to denigrate Melrose Place, which was did what it set out to do. I won't say it was a fine show because that seems dismissive. But Melrose Place was, you know, it was a cultural phenomenon, too. It's not that it was wrong. What I just think something they could have done and would have been more thematically related would be Shaw High. Now,
yes,
viewers of 90210 will remember in season 3, there's an episode that revolves around the pigskin prom. There's a grudge match between West Beverly and Shaw, which they never are specific about where it is, except that it's in South Central. This episode took place after the L.A. uprisings, or it was aired after that had just happened in 1992. So it was very fresh. There's a scene of stupid Brandon driving through, you know, burned storefronts and stuff. And obviously it was handled in a very ham-handed, stupid way. But one of the bright spots of this episode is that it introduces the character of Jordan Bonner, who is Brandon's counterpart at Shaw High. He's the editor of the school paper. And they develop this whole plan, which I won't get into. You can go listen to that episode again with this. But Jordan ends up coming back in several other episodes. He ends up dating Andrea for a while. And he is like such a fun character. One of the, you know, tertiary characters who will come in and call Brandon on his shit, which like he desperately needed all the time and so seldom got. And it would have made so much more sense to do another high school show at this time on Fox. And even then, like, I know it sounds crazy, and certainly you wouldn't want the same writers working on this show and writing storylines for black characters, like, please. But at that time, Fox was probably one of the few networks that actually had shows about black people. Like, this is, you know, circa In Living Color and stuff. I think there was a way there that it could have worked and been good. And even if you wanted to tie it in even more to the progenitor show, I looked it up, And one of the main zip codes in Compton is 90220. So you could have called it Shahai 90220.
Yeah.
So this is definitely a what might have been situation. Although, you know, if this weird comedic hybrid show of 90210 that's coming this summer works, maybe someone will go back and decide we need to re-explore the 90210-iverse and find other opportunities to do this. And, you know, you could do a show set in the 90s now and make it about Black characters and have it be a more interesting exploration of what it's like to be a teenager than 90210 did about white kids who are rich. Sarah.
True. Listeners, I informed Tara yesterday that if this wasn't Deshaun, the new class, that we were no longer friends, this will do. I will allow you. And you could also put Deshaun into the mix somehow. Speaking of familiar ground, mine is Dawson's Creek.
Yes.
And its spinoff, Young Americans. As you may recall, if you watch the reruns on wherever they are right now, late in season 3, they backdoor piloted Will Krudsky as a longtime friend of the Dawson's gang, who, of course, had never been heard of before and was never heard of again. He had stayed in touch with Pacey. He showed up, dated Andy, and split to go back to boarding school, where he was the fish out of water. And then there were various other boarding school tropes, including, if I'm not mistaken, can we call this character a trans character? I don't think we can.
No. More of a just one of the guys situation.
Yes, which is not the same thing at all.
No.
This show, I think they spun it off and tried to get it to go like in the summer.
Yeah.
And it still did not work out for them. It was like really a lot of very pretty people. Kate Bosworth, Ian Somerhalder. They had some serious fucking guest stars too. Like Jeremy Sisto was in the unaired pilot.
Wow.
Okay. And they had James Whitmore Jr. directing a bunch of these episodes. Like that, you know, they threw everything they had at it. Charlie Hunnam, they threw Matt Zuckery at it. They threw Glynis O'Connor at it.
Jeez.
No dice. Mm. Probably because many of these people either still can't act or can act a little now, but could not back then. Yeah. Or there was just too much like depthless, like static pretty on the CW at that time. Who knows why it didn't work out? My theory is that there was not enough opportunity to continue hating on Dawson Leary, which is why, obviously, the correct spinoff is a Gross Point-esque parody show of Dawson appearing on Project Greenlight.
Ooh.
That's good.
That's such a good idea.
I think they actually tried to do this for like a single episode, and they did have hilariously like one of the Twin Peaks ladies, Medchen. Is that how you pronounce it? Medchen Amick.
Yeah.
To come on as the Cape Side High film teacher, parentheses, not a thing, who shat all over Dawson's magnum opus, parentheses, totally a thing. So they clearly had, this writer's room clearly had the tools to make it, like, to despise Dawson.
Totally.
And should have rolled with that, because as it turns out, James Vanderbeek was in on it and could totally take it.
Yep. I love that.
And I don't think it's too late to
no,
do it.
No, I agree.
Dave. I'm not sure who plays Bayless, but I'm in. Dave.
All right, I'll take us home. Parent show, Battlestar Galactica, the Ron Moore reboot. The spinoff that probably should never have been was Caprica, which was sort of a low-stakes how Cylons came to be in the midst of really weird, boring corporate intrigue stuff. That was like the show. Kind of slow, kind of boring. So my idea for a spinoff is, let's double down on slow and boring, shall we, with a prequel to the prequel. Can a Battlestar Galactica show set planetside without space battles and without robots succeed? Let's find out. I think it can with Battlestar Galactica, the Corner Cutter. So Battlestar Galactica, the Corner Cutter is a blue collar story about Mac
and Mac is a factory worker responsible for cutting the corners off all printed material in the Battlestar Galactica universe. Now, if you're not familiar with Battlestar Galactica, it does this thing that a lot of sci-fi shows on TV and movies do, which is, I'm sure there's a trope name for it, but I will call it the tradition of the easy thing. And the easy thing is something that's slightly different from our world to tell you that this is a different place.
Oh, all the jackets have weird epaulets.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Unitards. It's yep. The future.
The silver glitter uniform. Blue skin. other things you can do for under $20.
Hexagons.
On Battlestar Galactica, it's turning square paper into oblong octagons. And they basically cut off the little corners of every page on a 45-degree angle at the top. Like, as much as you would dog-ear a page, that's always cut off any paper on the human side of the show.
It's really dumb.
That is very weird.
It really, yeah. So the question is, why does colonial society in the show universe not question why this is happening? Why do they need to take square books and reams of paper and cut off all the corners? So in my show, this process of cutting corners is a century-old tradition, but not like a forever tradition. Sort of like if we're talking about kind of the Industrial Revolution based on our times. Let's go back that far in their universe. So this tradition of cutting corners is sort of controlled by a handful of moneyed families and their corporations. And as Mac unravels the mystery and stakes of corner cutting, he sort of like moves up and up the ladder of conspiracy, intrigue, criminality, as they kind of figure out that the basis for so many rich and powerful families is that they make money off the busy work of cutting corners off all the paper in the Battlestar Galactic universe. And nobody really understands why. Nobody questions it, but it's actually the basis for like a giant shadow government society.
Big triangle.
As Mac progresses up this discovery ladder, he has to fight bigger and harder battles. He has to do it both covertly and overtly. So my elevator pitch is that it's a Battlestar Galactica Turk 182 meets American Psycho with custom business cards with the corners cut off of them.
Turk 182, is that what just happened? That's glorious.
Yes.
I love that.
Because he has to like jostle with these heads of all these corporations in sort of a public and behind the scenes kind of way. So it's, yeah, Turk 182 meets American Psycho plus, you know, different colored uniforms.
That is a very deep corner cut there.
Yes, thank you.
Love it.
That is it for this episode of Extra, Extra Hot Great, which is in fact itself a spinoff from the podcast Extra Hot Great, and probably a proud member of the Tommy Westfall universe. We haven't really done the research on that, but we suspect that is correct. Remember,
I mentioned Munch, so we're in there.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariana,
Beats,
and Sarah D. Bunting,
B asterisk Y asterisk E.
Thanks for listening, everyone, and we'll see you next time right here on Extra, Extra Hot Great.
What's wrong, Chief? You're all on edge.
It's this waiting. It's terrible.
Waiting?
Yeah, waiting. Yogi must be up by now. What's bothering me is, what is he up to? Where will he strike first?
I'm working on next month's Oscar nominations. Any preference?
I couldn't care less. What I don't want to see is the Bills winning the Super Bowl. As long as I'm alive, that doesn't happen.
Could be tough, sir. Buffalo wants it bad.
So did the Soviets in 80.
What, are you saying you rigged the Olympic hockey game?
What's the matter? Don't you believe in miracles?
This is the Extra, Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 81, The Lowest of Decks.
I am gatekeeper David T. Cole. I'm here with luminologist Sarah D. Bunting.
Positive for semen.
And house mother Tara Ariano.
Don't miss curfew again.
I mean, you're not going to hear it, but that was like the seventh take of that intro. I've been up for like 16 hours. Really? I got up at 2 o'clock in the morning, couldn't fall back asleep. That's none of your concern, dear listener. And speaking about dear listeners, today's topic comes from listener Sarah. She asks, what about creating Star Trek Lower Decks style shows for other series? Which low-powered employees from an existing TV show would make for a good spinoff? Now, whenever we have a topic like this or something around underlings and sort of the machinations that make the gears move, I always think of it as an opportunity to quickly pitch the Cigarette Squad, which are the minions that make sure the X-Files cigarette smoking man's whims become reality. They are the ones that make sure the Buffalo Bills will never win a Super Bowl, even though they want it real bad this year. But for the actual suggestions, for the actual answers, let's start with Tar.
Okay. Someone in the thread, because this came from the suggestion thread on Patreon, and thank you again for your support to all of you listening. Someone there suggested the PAs, the personal assistants from Succession, and I feel like if Succession were a network show, there already would have been like a breakout, you know, Rosencrantz and Guildenstern episode where we follow Colin, who is Logan's body man, where we follow him home, learn about his life, does he have a family, what are they like, what does he really think of the Roys? But the reason that Succession works as well as it does is that it will, I feel fairly confident in saying, it will never do that. We see these characters as little as we do for the same reason that we barely see, like, footmen or kitchen maids in a Jane Austen adaptation, which is that for story purposes, they are not people. They, you know, they are meat.
They're props.
that perform functions.
Furniture.
Exactly. Yeah. That make rich people's heedless, careless lives possible. So Succession is not my answer. My answer is, and I'm so glad that Sarah recently started watching this show so that she can comment, The Social Worker on Little Voice. Little Voice is not totally a workplace show, although it actually encompasses a whole bunch of different workplaces because Beth, the protagonist, has a bunch of different jobs. But it is established in the premiere that Bess's adult brother, Louis, who is on the autism spectrum, has only recently stopped living with her and has moved into supportive housing with a few other guys that are around his own age. And from what we see of it, it seems to be a 3 or 4 bedroom unit in an apartment building. And then their social worker, Elaine, who's played by the great Becky Ann Baker, lives in her own separate unit on the same floor. And we see a little bit over the course of the season of what she does with Louis and his roommates, not only in terms of like mediating disagreements between them when they happen or getting them through other kinds of emotional moments, but also like facilitating workshops for them to learn different life skills and challenging them to try things that they don't think they can do or that they just don't want to do. And even if you don't want to take Louis away from Little Voice, it's possible the premise could be that Elaine supervises multiple residences on the floor and then the spinoff focuses on, you know, a different one that Louis doesn't live in. Is there such a thing as too much Becky Ann Baker on TV? That is a rhetorical question. Obviously, there is not. And I've said this a bunch. I'm going to say it again. I think it would be really worthwhile for TV audiences to be exposed more to dramatizations of what social workers do, because the stakes that are inherent in their work are just as high as what cops do. And just as we all consider the place that cop shows have in pop culture, it would be just as great for society if we had replaced cop shows with social workers as it would if we replaced actual cops with actual social workers. What we put on TV is a reflection of what we value, and social workers should be valued more and seen more, and the average person should have a better understanding of what they do so they can advocate harder to move state funds toward getting more of them to do it, and TV can help. Sarah, you have watched Little Voice. What are your thoughts?
First of all, Becky Ann Baker is an underrated treasure. She's got so much range in the kinds of roles she can play. Like when she turns up on the occasional Law and Order, it's just like a bitch on wheels. You're always like, oh, right, you could do that too. Mm-hmm. Because she does have a certain edgeless warmth naturally. But when she's in that role, it's effortless. So yes, A+. For that for the use of her and the actor. And I haven't watched a whole lot more of Little Voice since we spoke about it on the main podcast yet. But one thing that struck me about Louis and his milieu is that they use just enough of him and of them. And that's one of the things that I like about the show generally is that how balanced it is in all sorts of ways, but that it didn't sort of like hear anything from the universe about like Kramerizing these guys.
Yeah. Yeah.
But by the same token, if there is a, well, all right, unfortunate use of terminology, which you'll see in a second. But if there is a spinoff, I think that also allows, by focusing on social workers, that I think immediately diversifies your cast in all kinds of ways. So I think that's always a good thing.
All right.
So yeah, I'm with it. Good idea. Go make it. I want to watch it.
Thank you so much.
All right. Sarah, you go next.
Okay. My employees are hardly low powered, but I have always wanted a spinoff that's basically this like, not Malick-y, but like 33 short films about Rogers and Warner in the locker room. So like, it's just like, you know, and the scenes are sort of like, sometimes it's just like 22 seconds of them sitting there.
You should explain who they are for people who are not.
Oh, I'm sorry. So yes, Emmy Rogers and Emmy Warner are medical examiner, coroner characters on respectively Law and Order, Mothership, and Criminal Intent. And Warner is on SVU mostly. She was in the credits for a while, now gone, but that thing is in season 261, so whatever. Rogers is one of my favorite sort of auxiliary characters of all time, played by the great Leslie Hendricks. Warner is played by Tamara Tooney. I mean, they, like, there is sort of just enough of them historically in that franchise as well, but I think it might be an interesting limited series to do and just show them together. I think they never overlap. They probably do at some point. But just in the locker room and, you know, each episode is kind of like, all right, well, maybe in one episode they're working on the same case together. And another episode is just like sort of a, you know, but it's like them ships in the night in the locker room, basically. And sometimes they're silent. And sometimes you come in on the end of a joke that's like, so then the rabbi says, I am a penguin. And then you cut to the next scene. I'm not sure exactly how you do that like episodically. It might end up being more of a feature type of thing. But if you expanded it to various other evidence techs and crime scene people from the Law and Order verse, there is a guy who I think is in season one. I still remember his delivery of the word wise ass because there's like a wrong password pop up that he's trying to crack. And he's like, wise ass. I wouldn't mind following that guy for a day. Daniel Sunjata's SVU crime scene guy. Wouldn't mind following him for a day. Do a prequel of What's-His-Nuts, who went bonkers and tried to kill Olivia Benson.
Oh, yeah. Jefferson Mays.
Yes. So the idea is that the audience kind of drops into conversations midstream and then drops out midstream also. So you're just sort of getting snippets. But also you're getting some process. I think that would be fun.
I love it.
And more Law and Order. Seldom a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
But if we can take the focus off the cops and, you know, the numerous Brady violations that we all have to accept Jack McCoy was committing even while he was asleep, it's probably better.
Love it.
Dave.
All right. So just to mention Star Trek Lower Decks, because we were talking about it on the show, we were saying like it started off kind of meh, but it got more assured and better, and we've watched a couple more episodes after that and they were a little bit better still. So it keeps on improving.
It does. Yeah.
All right. So remember when Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. started and the joke was how all the marquee superheroes, your Iron Mans, your Thors, your Captain's America.
They were just here.
Chrissy Snow. Yeah.
We're always just off camera. You know, they're just called away before S.H.I.E.L.D. had to solve some S.H.I.E.L.D.-y issue.
Uh-huh.
But what if that budgetary conceit for ABC was written in as an in-universe S.H.I.E.L.D. directive? What if there was a motley crew of low-level agents whose only function was to make sure the bigwig superheroes were never bothered with low-level SHIELD business? So like maybe a mid-level SHIELD manager is dealing with a regional semi-super villain, and he thinks he could just ring up Doctor Strange and call it a day, but that's not what Doctor Strange is here for. Enter the Agents of Debta. Agents of Don't Ever Bother the Avengers.
Okay. Got it.
Uh-huh. Five green SHIELD agents comprised of rookies, idiot children of SHIELD muckety mucks, and a talking dog, because they must run interference for the Avengers and ensure that the Avengers are not bogged down with SHIELD busy work. Episode titles for the first few episodes include Iron Man Was Just Here, Knock Knock Who's There, not Thor, that's for sure, Black Widow's First Vacation in 6 Years, Hulk Has Left the Building, Guardians of the Surprise Party, and the season finale for season one is called It's Okay to Call Hawkeye.
Mom worked here. Maybe it'll be okay.
No, we're supposed to do better than our parents. We're not supposed to be going backwards. We're going to end up as immigrants on a ship back to Ireland.
This is the Extra Extra Hot Gray Podcast, episode 125, Second Generation Spinoffs. I am Sprocket Mogul David T. Cole, and I'm here with Mission District Accomplished Sarah D. Bunting.
You call it a burrito?
And yogurt maker and microbrewer Tara Ariano.
I'm going to call my company Microsoft. Welcome to Extra Extra Hot Great. Thank you so much for your support, for making these bonus episodes possible, and for, on occasion, supplying us with topics, as one of you has done this week. Lex Ann writes, please create a second generation spinoff with one or two specific episodes. This is essentially the idea of the 30-something show that may or may not happen. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking of Sally Draper, Meadow Soprano, possibly Rose Wilder. Who would like to go first?
I went with Nicole Chance, who was the daughter of Eldon Chance on...
I believe that one would be Chances.
You're right. That was the sort of noir, forensic psych noir starring Hugh Laurie.
Yep.
This show is called Second Chance because you basically have to.
Sure, sure.
Yep.
It is starring the same actor, Stefania Levi-Owen, who I just love and would love her to be in all sorts of things. She's actually in Sweet Tooth, which we're covering on the main podcast, I believe.
Correct.
I just like the actor a lot. I always have. The Second Chance title is right there. I think that you can mix a San Francisco noir with some Veronica Mars styles, maybe a little better and less self-importantly than the original. I think its best shot, honestly, is subtracting the compulsion-catalyzing Hitchcock blonde aspect of noir from this. Nothing against Hugh Laurie, but that show just needed a little bit more of his housey tartness to it, and I think Owen is perfect in that regard. The character would be in college by now, slash starting a master's degree. She's around 22, 23. You drop her into like a forensic psych program or a law school innocence project internship scenario, and you see what's up. I mean, the first, like all the episodes sort of write themselves from that standpoint. So I didn't get into a ton of specifics, but I think it's pretty easy to set up. Like she's at the Innocence Project. She's just like highlighting some case numbers, scut work. Comes across a case obsession of hers, namely Kristen Modafferi, which is a real Bay Area cold case, who happened to have gone missing the day Nicole was born. And then it all sort of like noirishly gets tied together with her father's caseload and a man claiming that he was wrongfully convicted of a similar murder. And then you just take it from there. Every season can be a different case, sort of boshily, actually. And yeah, like just back a truckload of money up to Stefania Owen's house because she's good and I like her.
All right.
Dave.
My show is called Jetson.com. It's the story of Elroy Jetson, who becomes a dot-com zillionaire. He creates a new social network in his early 20s. It's called Clank, which pairs you with compatible sex robots. And then he uses that money to create a big media empire, setting up the show, which is basically a age-reversed version of Succession, where the youngest has the power. Think about Succession if Roman had all the power and was the one who created the corporation.
Mm-hmm.
One of his first acts in the first episode, which is called Sprockets, is he buys Spacely Space Sprockets, which you may remember is where his dad worked, George Jetson. And he buys it only so he become his dad's boss because they've had sort of an estrangement between the cartoon years and this series, you see. Mm-hmm. And his dad does not approve of his cutthroat methods and his dubious morals. So he buys it only so he can become his dad's boss. And his first act as this sort of dickish, entitled 20-something billionaire is he replaces everybody with robots and all management with AI. So it becomes a completely humanless corporation, putting his father out of work, forcing his father at the end of episode one to come work for him in some capacity to sort of have to work his way up within his son's company. So that is the genesis of Jetson.com.
Wow.
I had two others that I didn't flesh out, but I considered. So here's my runner-ups.
Okay.
A dramedy about peaking in high school called Steve Holt.
Oh, yes. Would watch. Uh-huh.
And I have one about Glenn Bishop from Mad Men, the creepy guy from Mad Men, played by Weiner's son.
Mm-hmm.
Like the last thing we know about Glenn, he's probably getting shipped off to Vietnam.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's his story about this psychopath in Vietnam who keeps getting promoted up the chain because he's a psychopath and he's getting results. And you get noticed, you get promoted, and it sort of becomes this farcical somewhere between Dr. Strangelove and Forrest Gump, where he becomes the center of everything that happens in the 70s into the early 80s as he psychopathically fails upwards in society.
Eep.
Yep.
Mm.
All right. Dark. Take us home.
Well, I'll start with, I also had a runner-up, which is a spinoff of The Americans that picks back up with the Jennings kids in America, what they are doing after their parents have gone back to the USSR. What are Paige's loyalties? You know, she was trained to be a Soviet spy. Is that still where her politics are? Does Henry know anything about what went down? Is the government still, you know, keeping tabs on them, etc.? But instead, I went light. This is called Princes of Jordan. It's a spinoff of 30 Rock about Tracy Jordan's children, who are, at this point, Virginia is 11. She was 2 in 2012, so that would make her 11. Tracy Jr., played by Bobby J. Thompson, that kid is 25. That hilarious kid. Crazy.
Wow.
George Foreman, played by Dante E. Clark. His age is unknown, but let's say 30-ish. And then there's Donald.
Boom. Boom. That guy? The guy who opens a Godzilla restaurant?
Yes. Donald.
Donald.
Tracy's maybe son, maybe not. No one knows. He was played by Michael Benjamin Washington. His age is even more unknown. So the premise is Tracy Jordan has died and left his vast estate to his survivors, half, of course, to his widow, Angie, played by Sherry Shepherd, and the rest divided among his children, all four. And since Tracy never confirmed whether Donald was actually his biological son or just a scammer who was possibly older than Tracy himself, this is a source of simmering tension between him and the rest of Tracy's heirs. So in the pilot, Donald and Tracy Jr. find themselves at loggerheads when they find out they're trying to open competing Tracy Jordan museums and end up bidding against each other for the site of his last known foster home. And in the B-plot, Angie tries to convince Virginia to endorse shapewear for teens. And for sweeps, Angie tries to broker peace between Donald and his maybe siblings by inviting him on a family Thanksgiving vacation to one of Tracy's favorite places, Atlantic City. But it works a little too well when Donald leads his brothers on a tour of the city's wildest strip joints and every dancer expects them to tip as recklessly as their late dad did. Princes of Jordan.
Do it.
Do what?
Just get it over with. I'd rather you kill me than some imp.
I told you, I am no longer a hunter. I am a Nestroid.
This is the Extra Extra Hot Rate Podcast, episode 126, Spin Cycle. I am stiff-jointed former killer David T. Cole, and I'm here with slot machine Sarah D. Bunting.
If I had a nickel.
And fidget spinner Tara Ariano.
2017 forever!
Hello, and welcome back to Extra, Extra Hot Great, the podcast made possible by your support. Thank you so much. This week, I present you Spin Cycle, so maybe, just maybe, I didn't quite get last week's description right the first time, and I thought we were doing, instead of spinoffs with children, we were doing second-generation spinoffs. I misinterpreted as spinoffs of spinoffs, and because no part goes unused, this week, it is Spin Cycle. We're going to create a spinoff of an existing spinoff, title it, cast it, and describe an episode or two of it. And then, because our ideas were so good, we'll quickly describe what the spinoff of that spinoff would be. So what that is, a spinoff of a spinoff of a spinoff. Yep. I will start us off with a spinoff of a spinoff of a movie series that is The Mandalorian from Star Wars. My spinoff of The Mandalorian is called IG-11 Galactic Nurse. You may remember that IG-11 is the sort of skeletal, straight-arm, straight-leg assassin droid who moves and turns and twists and was fighting the Mandalorian at one point in the series for the child and then later was reprogrammed by the Ugnaught and became a nurse droid that then took care of the child. So my spinoff is about him, even though he melted. He's a droid. His data went into the cloud and somebody downloaded into IG-12 or something. It is a limited series about the further improbable adventures of IG-11 Galactic Nurse as they take care of all sorts of notable Star Wars characters in their infancy. Think Muppet Babies plus The Mandalorian, and you've yes, got please. The core of Galactic Nurse.
Mm-hmm.
Got two episodes on deck for you. I've got Grand Mom Tarkin. When Ellen Tarkin is called away on business, it's up to IG-11 to take care of her sadistic yet collected infant son, Will Huff, who likes to spend his time on the family's large estate burning space ants with a large magnifying glass.
Mm-hmm.
And then our second episode is Hive of Fun and Silly. When everyone in the Mos Eisley Cantina is regressed to the younger selves by a vengeful Night Sister, it's up to IG-11 to keep the likes of Snaggletooth, Hammerhead, and wee little Chewbacca occupied while a counter spell is found by a hermit named Ben. So that is IG-11 Galactic Nurse. And because IG-11 Galactic Nurse has become such a huge hit, they demanded a spinoff of that,
right.
And that's going to be Coruscant General, and that's where all the robot doctors learn to practice medicine. It's basically ER or Grey's Anatomy or every hospital show you've ever seen, but with crazy assassin reprogrammed robots learning to work, live, love, and laugh. That's Coruscant General.
Love it.
Sarah.
I started out thinking, let's try to spin off Golden Palace, which was a spinoff of the Golden Girls.
Of course.
But then I was reading up on the show and was reminded that Empty Nest, which I did not watch, was also a spinoff of Golden Girls, and that after Golden Palace got sacked, Sophia was returned to the girls' verse on Empty Nest, which was still on.
Mm-hmm.
The explanation was that she had moved back into Shady Pines, which apparently had been rebuilt between when Golden Girls started and Sophia's return to the Empty Nest timeline, because it burned down before Golden Girls, I think, because of Sophia.
Right.
Anyway, The spinoff is a Sophia-centric single-cam mockumentary called Shady Pines. It's shot in the style of Arrested Development. It stars Gene Hackman as a retired, or is he, bank robber.
Yes.
Adam Arkin is the Shady Pines chief administrator, and Alan Arkin as his dad, who lives on site and is always trying to undermine Arkin Jr. Rita Moreno as Lydia, her character from One Day at a Time. She also, there was like a failed backdoor pilot of Empty Nest.
Yeah, we watched it for the, it was a no-knack submission by Danny.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, God, that's right. I blocked that out completely with Paul Dooley. Anyway, just like looping her back in to kind of even out the scales of TV Justice.
Sure.
Chris Orbach and Regina Taylor as the gerontologist on call, Keith Richards as a lobby potted plant, and various fancy guest stars as residents, kids, siblings, attorneys, etc., and so on. The pilot is pilot-y. Everyone's roles are established via the death of a resident, played in flashback by your favorite, Tara, Betty White, and the very dark discoveries the main cast makes when nosily attending her estate sale. The second episode introduces a runner about the retired mafioso, played by Frank Carbone Severo, who has cuckoo's nested his way into the memory care wing to avoid prosecution, but keeps showing up at the bocce court every day to conduct business, so on and so forth. The spinoff is Even Shadier Pines, which concerns the efforts of the residents to fundraise for a new roof on the building by leasing the activities hall to a drag club on weekend nights.
Oh, shit.
This is basically What If Trixie and Katya live-action Muppets, but with Q-tips. Yep. And the more I think about it, the more I need this to happen, mostly because I loved Trixie and Katya's show possibly more than they did. I know it almost broke Katya, and I hope she is well, and I'm not saying anything needs to happen, except maybe I am saying that. And a question mark. Anyway, Shady Pines and Even Shadier Pines coming, I hope, to a streaming service near you.
Fantastic. Well, steeping in the late 80s for Listen to Sassy has reminded me how much I loved and idolized the character of Denise Huxtable, played by Lisa Bonet on The Cosby Show. Even though I was 100% a Vanessa, I thought Denise was the greatest. I loved her clothes. I think I knew I would never be able to achieve that level of cool, so I didn't even bother to wish I could be her, but instead wished I could have an older sister like her.
Mm-hmm.
And when she got her own spinoff, A Different World, about going to college, I was thrilled and never missed an episode, and I was not the only one for whom it was meaningful. Vanity Fair published an oral history of the show last month, which is great. We'll link it in the show notes. I wish there were a way I could rewatch her season of A Different World, although it was good the whole way through and I didn't stop watching when Lisa Bonet left, without any residuals going to Bill Cosby. And I really wish someone would just make me an edit of The Cosby Show that's only the Denise scenes, which I might just like DIY myself by like putting on episodes and fast forwarding them. But anyway, we all know Denise was written out of A Different World when Lisa Bonet got pregnant with Zoe Kravitz, later to return to The Cosby Show, try to figure out her post-college career path, having dropped out of Hillman. And then left again and then returned to announce some big life changes for her character, specifically that she met a divorced Navy officer named Martin Kendall and married him, becoming the stepmother to his daughter, Olivia, breakout star Raven Simone. What we didn't see when she was off screen was what her time in Africa was like. That's where she moved. So when that's where my show comes in. It's called A Different Continent.
Mm-hmm.
Some sitcoms get drama spinoffs. Your Lou Grant, your Trapper John MD. That's what I envision happening here in a big, splashy, expensive original series for Paramount Plus. Since I looked it up, Viacom owned the rights at various points. I'm imagining they could get them back and that it would be shot on location in Tanzania. And though it would be cute for Zoe Kravitz to take over the role of Denise, and she certainly does look young enough to be a recent college dropout, even though she is 32. Instead, I went with someone who's younger and has Denise's vibe, Zendaya. You'll meet her friends, see her at work, watch her figure out her life. I imagine the pilot is just her, you know, arriving in Tanzania and, like, figuring out where she's going to live and so forth, which, like, you know, based on what we saw of Denise on the show, would be a challenge. And on The Cosby Show, she was usually portrayed as a flake, but I don't think you can pick up and move to another continent without having some just life competence. Also, apparently one of Denise's jobs was nature photographer. Great place to photograph some nature. I'd love to see, like, how her work life was in a different episode. And for her husband, Martin, who needs to be older than she is, I'm picturing Winston Duke from Us and Black Panther. Love him.
Mm-hmm.
for the spinoff of the spinoff, present-day Denise, now a young widow in her 50s, once again played by Lisa Bonet, moves back to the U.S. from her late husband's last naval posting in Germany to teach special ed in an under-resourced public school in Brownsville, New York. She moves back into her late parents' old house with her OBGYN sister, Vanessa, Tempest Bledsoe, now married to a lawyer named Kiara, Jennifer Esposito. Denise is working on a weekend shift at the Park Slope Food Co-op when she runs into her old Hillman roommate, Maggie, Marissa Tomei. Though she's excited at first to reconnect, she soon finds out that she and Maggie have a lot less in common than they used to. Maggie is running a snooty Brooklyn charter school that's siphoning funds out of the city school budget that could be going to educate Denise's students. Getting to know more about the issue sparks Denise's activist spirit as she wages battle against her old friend in... I forgot to title this one. Differenter World this week. A different school. There you go.
There it is.
And that's my idea.
I'd watch that.
Thank you.